Well, thank you for that. Well, as you know, it is a mark of Socialist Party meetings that part of the meeting is taken up with questions, discussion from the audience. But as I said earlier, we don't propose that this will be go on for too long. And I would remind you, of course, that you've got the whole of the evening to carry on the discussion between listening to the music. But I will now invite questions.
Could the people in the other wing get more air?
That's something that we can probably...
When Isaac Newton was in Parliament, that speech he ever made was someone to ask them for windows.
Right, having been able to grant that request, would anyone like to ask a question of either of the speakers? Or...
Yes, I'm Bill Martin. What degree of understanding of Marxian economics the working class would have to have in order to make, put it another way, to see the falsity of capitalism? I was thinking in terms of the labour theory of value and Marxist theory of economics. How much of that do they have to know?
Well, obviously, when you debate with people who've got absolutely no formal schooling in economics, you'd be surprised how often they come up with what are actually very complicated economic arguments that they seem to just absorb from the atmosphere. Of course, they're all over the place, implicit in schools and in the media. I'd say they wouldn't need to have a vast and encyclopedic knowledge of the labour theory of value. I think the important thing to understand is twofold. Firstly, that everything that is made in sight, all the wealth that is produced by the working class, and that capital does not produce things of its own accord. And secondly, to understand the importance of the difference between labour and labour power. I think that's that's the key discovery that made, never mind the rest of the labour theory of value, the idea that we're not underpaid, we're not shortchanged, that exploitation is inherent to the wages system. I think that's the important thing that needs to be understood, and after that, most of the rest of it just flows naturally, I suppose.
Yes?
Yeah, I understand your party has been built up 100 years ago, and Karl Marx right after how we make the revolution. I mean, is it relevant today? How do we make a revolution or socialism, make a reality? Which is a class consciousness. How is class consciousness improving in society? Somebody becomes socialist, like a working class, and then they are in the war, and the working should be have a class consciousness to do revolution or socialism achieve, or organization like any party take to them to consciousness, to make them organize, to smash the bourgeois ideology.
Yes, I think I do understand it, but the problem here is, you know, that the Socialist Party of Great Britain was formed in 1904, and as we say in this month's edition of it, in a sense the founder members would be dreadfully disappointed if they'd thought that 100 years from now we'd be meeting in a hall such as this, living inside a capitalist society. Many of them were thought they would get it in their lifetime. But what we do know about socialism, and well, we've not got a crystal ball, or as one comrade in Glasgow once very foolishly said, we don't have crystal balls. They wonder why they were laughing at. We can't foresee the future in any real sense. What we can do is this, though, is we can learn from the present. And even if it's only in a negative fashion, as our comrade said earlier there, experience has taught us that a Bolshevik revolution, a dictatorship of a small group of leaders is not going to lead to socialism. Experience has shown us that schemes of nationalisation and social reform don't bring about socialism. So what are we left with? What we're left with is what the founder members were saying, who, remember, hadn't had these two world wars, hadn't had a Russian revolution, hadn't had all these nationalising schemes. What they said way back then is still valid today. Socialism is impossible without a majority of socialists. There's no quick way to get it. Now, how do we get a majority of socialists? If it was just a case of us being evangelists, a sort of socialist Billy Grahams, relying on our brilliance at converting the masses, as they say, into consciousness, then it'd be a hopeless plight. It'd be absolutely hopeless. What the job of a socialist is to do is to analyse the society we live in and say to our fellow workers, does this series of ideas work? Because let's face it, it's not the Socialist Party that's going to bring about socialism, it's the world's working class. Now, how do they get into this position? Well, what we know about the last 100 years is the working class is completely different from what it was in 1904. There are more people now, less people now engaged in manual labour. There's more, if you looked at every city in the world, what we would you see? New York and Moscow and Chicago and London and all the rest of it. Millions of workers, more and more of them, coming into the city, counting other people's money. Basically, all the insurance companies and banks, all the advertising agencies, all the insurance companies, all of them are doing work essential for the running of capitalism, but pointless from the standpoint of socialism. When workers begin to grasp the idea that only a small part of the working class itself actually produces, distributes, and manages the production and distribution of all the wealth that is created, that the majority of the workers, think of all the millions of workers throughout the world who are in armies and police force, lawyers, all the day-to-day machinations of a financial system such as this. This system has reached the stage where it's a fetter in production. People are stopped from producing. Now, when do we get to this period that a friend talks about of mass understanding of it? Well, it could start here. It could start when somebody here says, my problem is that I'm poor, to our problem is we're poor. It could start here when somebody changes their idea that this is the only possible society. It starts amongst men and women of the working class, not from the oratory or lack of oratory of socialist speakers, but from their own experience. The only purpose of the Socialist Party of Great Britain is to speed up that process. We've not been terribly successful at it, and I've not clapped myself on the back about it. But we would ask you the opposite question. What other way is there for men and women to have this type of society that's so desirable, where war is impossible, where poverty just is a thing of the past? How can we get it? Well, if there is another way, a quick way, let's hear it. Well, we've been listening for 100 years for this quick way, and it just doesn't exist. What we need is a grown-up adult working class, one that's left thrown off the swaddling clothes, if you like, of reformist politics and embraces revolutionary ones. All we can do is help that process along.
Anyone else with questions? Hi,
I'm concerned about the working class consciousness from two perspectives. Firstly, you have people in society who say they actively don't want to be working class. They say, I'm not middle class. I've worked all my life to be something other than working class. I'm middle class. I'm upper middle class. What do you do with people like that? And also, from the other perspective, you take somebody who lives in a third world country whose daily concern is basically feeding themselves and their family. What do we do about their consciousness?
Would you like to take?
Yes. First off, obviously, with the people who's trying to say that they're middle class, I mean, generally, we argue with them. I mean, that's the first point. I mean, very often, when you start asking questions about how much stress they get off the boss, how much hassle they get, you know, the fact that they have to keep on selling their labour power. And if you keep on putting the case clearly, well, no, this is what we mean by working class. You may think you're middle class. you know, because you own your own home, but do you really own it, or is it actually owned by the bank and you pay the bank rent with any form of interest on a mortgage and this sort of thing? These arguments can be made. I mean, that's part of a different part of what the Socialist Party is about, is coming up with the counter arguments that you can put to these propositions. And obviously, in the case of workers who are incredibly poor, no matter where they are the world over, I mean, the obvious first thing they need to do is fight the class struggle in order to win that space of freedom that they need, that security, where they can begin to think about taking control and running the whole society themselves. So, I mean, the first steps are obviously trade union organisation, struggling for shorter working hours, getting as much as they can out of the capitalists. And the fact is that the whole gamut runs from one end to the other. That, you know, even workers who are immensely well paid, some of them are working all so many hours that they can see their families and, you know, effectively have no home lives. And they too have the same sort of interest in the same sort of struggle against their employers. And I think part of the job of socialists is to try and put out these ideas that there is this common interest and that there is this common feature both in all these societies, which is the sale of labour power, which is the fact that there is a labour market and that we have this commodity in common. And that's the important element. And then to start saying, well, you know, the capitalists themselves are utterly redundant. The fact that they no longer actually need to even make the investment decisions themselves, they can pay a worker to invest their money and make them a profit without even having to actually touch it or think about where it's being spent. That's, I think, another stage forward in the argument. And obviously, yes, as Dick says, that we can't, we're a very small number of people, we have very limited reach in our voices. And the fact is that a large number of workers themselves realise this and start to think about it. I mean, I know I've got work colleagues who used to be yuppies, but they dropped out because they couldn't stand the stress or the pressure or something. Now, it doesn't happen to many of them, but, you know, if yuppies can become librarians, then there's hope for that.
Would anyone else like to ask a question? Yes, you have asked one. You may ask another.
Nobody asked me anything. Yeah. I mean, when you go to working class and they ask them or somebody, poor people, they think in the Lenin's type or Stalin's type people, they represent the real socialism. They scare it. See what? Now, if the Socialist Party is going to explain the people about socialism, have to be very the people there. But I can't see you any activity. I mean, if you believe ideology, if you Karl Marx said, it's no question to expand the world, question is to change it. I mean, if you stick to that idea and human action go together, isn't it correct, you think?
Would you like to comment?
Yes, well, I mean, I take your point, you know, the point of paraphrasing about philosophers have only interpreted the world. The point, however, is to change it. But then the next question is, how do you change it? Is there any other way other than the majority class understanding acting in a democratic fashion to bring it about? If there is, let's hear it. All we have done here is a couple of times, we've made passing references to policies of reforms and to dictatorships a la the Lenin model, and say, well, these haven't worked. That's patently the case. You don't have to be a university professor to know that. When the ex-president of the United States says, we've got no system to deal with these problems, that shows that capitalism has reached this point where it's in a period of social revolution. For instance, here's an example. I quoted earlier from Marx, but here from the same thing, it's a preface to the Contribution to the Critique of Political Economy. No social order ever disappears before all the productive forces for which there is room in it have been developed, and new higher relations of production never appear before the material conditions have matured in the womb of the old society. Therefore, mankind only takes up only such problems as it can solve. Since looking at the matter more closely, we'll always find that the problem itself arises only when the material conditions necessary for its solution already exist, or at least in the process of formation. From a Marxist viewpoint, what's happening here is that capitalism has still got room to develop. I mean, earlier, one of the contributors said, what about the Third World War? Third World War. So what about the Third World, so-called Third World, is supposed to mean by Asia or South America or something like what they call less developed countries. Well, what is the answer there? Capitalism is development at a fantastic rate there. Why is it that many jobs, well, the awful jobs, but nevertheless jobs, are leaving America and Britain and going to India, all those horrible call centres that they've got in India? Here is it in a third world, so-called third world country, although it's debatable in the case of India now, where it's gone on, the production of wealth inside that society has reached such a stage that now if you book an airline ticket, or even if you book an appointment with your doctor, it's probably somebody in Delhi or Calcutta that's actually processing them. That's probably why you end up in Calcutta instead of going to Brighton your holidays. But the thing about it is, could that have been dreamt of in 1904? Could that have been dreamt of in 1954? People would have poo-hooed that idea. Capitalism is developing, not just at steady rate, but like a gigantic snowball. And with it, as Marx says, with those problems comes already the beginnings of a solution. And here's an example of it. We reckon at call centres in Britain that there's a turnover of approximately, people last about 2 years in it. In Delhi, they reckon that people are only lasting about 18 months in it. In other words, here are workers in the so-called less developed saying, bugger this for a game of soldiers. This on the phone all the time, looking at a screen, 40 hours. Even though the wages are much better than they previously enjoyed, they give it up and leave it. There's a big turnover. Because here again, the working class is not static any more than the capitalist class or the capitalist system itself is static. It's always developing. So I think it would be very foolish of us to say, ah, here we have capitalism, it's going to last forever. Because from a Marxian perspective, as Marx himself said, attempts at solving these problems only arise when a possibility exists, or at least is in the process of doing so. When men and women of the working class in Glasgow look at people in Delhi and say, he's doing the same crappy job as me, but he had more sense than me, he only stuck it for 18 months, I stuck it for 2 years. Where are they going to talk about? And this is happening all over the world. There is not a product in the world, it's hard to imagine a product, one of these electronic things, that is produced in one country. We had a member who at one time was a cargo manager at British Airlines, and they do a lot of business with IBM at Greenock, the computer people. And he was saying that they were sending stuff to various places in Asia that was worked upon and then sent back there. Capitalism. I mean, when we see a product now, it's a product not of one person. The days of small handicraft are gone, except perhaps for artists or people in rather esoteric occupations. The majority of wealth is produced today by the whole of society. And as that becomes more and more obvious, it's just another step to say, why not owned by the whole of society? So we don't take the, and again, I've got to go back to your question. If not mass understanding, what to bring about socialism? It's your problem as well as our problem.
Is there anyone else with a question? Anyone from the ante room that's burning to ask a question?
Well, I'm a bit new. Can you just explain briefly the difference between communism and socialism?
Very briefly, none.
As long as you want.
Oh. Do you want to deal with that?
As long as I want, this is a long, rambling subject. Essentially, as Dick said, none. We use the words pretty much interchangeably. The difference arose, well, in the 19th century, Marx and Engels preferred to use the words communism because in Europe that was seen as the atheistic version of the two words, whereas socialism was preferred in England because over here communism sounded a bit too much like communion, a bit Catholic that, so they preferred socialism. So the two words essentially means exactly the same thing: common ownership and democratic control of the means of producing and distributing wealth. And in fact, if you read some of the social democrats in Germany, Kautsky and that lot, they tend to use the words communism and socialism interchangeably. The likes of William Morris over here used it interchangeably. But what happened was when Lenin and his band of gangsters got to power in Russia, they started saying, well, Marx talked about two stages. The first is socialism, the second is communism. And they meant that they called the transitional stage of state ownership on the way to communism, socialism. But then if you go to your average Oxford English Dictionary, they'll say that socialism is it's owned by the state, and communism is everything owned by the state. Well, we'd say, well, no, there's no state in socialism or communism. So another thing about what we're about is trying to keep these definitions very clear and being very precise about what we mean. And when we say socialism or when we say communism, we mean a stateless, classless, moneyless society the world over. The cooperative commonwealth or the free association of producers. Add different names to it as long as you like.
There was someone at the back who had a question. Yes, you
question of theory, not principles. Yeah, I often hear it said also tonight that there are fewer industrial workers. I doubt this because I think machinery and all sorts of things are made in China and Asia and other parts of the world instead of here. So while there may be fewer, there are still many.
Well, I don't doubt that there's many. Somebody's got to be producing the wealth, haven't they? I mean, I'm not saying anything other than that. But I think it is true that because of the vast productive capacity that capitalism has developed technically, fewer and fewer members of the working class are actually engaged in the production of goods. The majority of them are dealing with ownership or the transfer of ownership. Or the protection of ownership. For instance, you know, you just take an example here of the likes of the wheat fields of America. In America, you get one man and a machine there doing the work that 50 years ago would have probably taken 50 men, and 100 years ago, perhaps 200 men. In other words, society's reached a stage where fewer and fewer people are producing more and more wealth. And more people are engaged in the administration, the day-to-day running of this private property relationships. Even in China, more and more workers are engaged, and as it inevitably will happen. If you've seen any of those films of people who are leaving the land in China and who are just hanging about railway stations waiting to be employed. Think of why is that necessary? Because small production isn't profitable anymore. They are going through a period in some parts of it similar to what happened in the Enclosures Act in England and the Highland Clearances in Scotland. What's happening is they've been thrown off the land and into the cities, and that's more and more the case. And in a sense, a city is the embodiment of capitalism. Major scale production. More and more workers engaged in mere administration rather than in creation. I don't think there's any evidence from China or elsewhere that that trend is not speeding up.
Could I make one point about the idea of capitalism? Excuse me, my name's Peter Sethi. I'm sort of 50-year-old beginner at the in the SPGB. I came in about 1958, actually, during Band of Bomb times and all that kind of thing. Idealistic ideas and so forth. And I thought about this from time to time, often. I'm an artist. In other words, I produce things, but I don't produce them for money. But I need to live, so I have to sell them. So, I mean, there's a kind of, not quite a Marxist position here, because Marx couldn't actually explain the value of art. So a bit of a nigger in the woodpile, if I can use the expression.
No.
And one of the things that is a conflict in Marx, one of them, I mean, there are plenty of others, and I think I'm a dedicated Marxist, don't think about that. I'm as strong as anybody for a world in which we can all behave, and a universal world in which we can seriously, sensibly, and understand the way that people can work if they put their minds to it. But there is a conflict, and the conflict is that we are, to some extent, caught in this dilemma between capitalism, as Marx saw it, as a kind of springboard for the potential of socialism. He made this quite clear, that there was a kind, and he was a Darwinist. I mean, there's another point, is there was another level to the Marxist position is revolution and evolution. Whether revolution is a point at which we must actually take place in that movement, or evolution, that it will inevitably take place because capitalism cannot satisfy the needs. Its conflicts will give rise to the changes of which socialism can only make those changes. Now, there are two similar ideas, but in fact, they're conflicting because it means that we can sit down and just wait. Because capitalism is a bad scene and it will carry on until it can't solve its own problems, and then they will come to the point, sensible idea, which human beings always will come to, and that is a socialist idea. It would be nice, and I hope, and I'm not hoping, because I don't hope. Anyway, we only do it if we do it, if we make it. So evolution or revolution? Revolution means you've got to get your hands dirty. You've got to find out, like a carpenter, get the nerves on your hands to feel the people, and feel what they are. Sometimes you have to be cunning in order with the material that you're using, but only for their own reasons. Now, I'm not giving this a moral idea. I'm a structural socialist, like a structural artist. I'm concerned about the material I'm using. And to some extent, as socialists, we are structural socialists. We have to know what people want. We have to know how we can help them to see the clarity of our thought. Now, it contradicts, going back to my first thing,
what
I'm a rambler, actually, I'm sorry.
What is your point?
My original point was a big conflict between the idea of the revolution of the proletariat. Is we talk about the ownership and the ownership property of the means of production and distribution by a capitalist class, of which we virtually have no, as workers, have no control. We talk about the transference of that property, means of production, to the proletariat. But you're not really, that's not a revolution. We haven't changed the idea of property.
Right, I take it that is
and
your...
That is the dilemma of the Socialist Party of Great Britain. We have to change the idea of property. It has to be another abstract form, because property belongs to capitalism. The concept of it, you cannot transfer it to the idea of the working class, because then you produce another form, because the dilemma is in the concept of property.
Sorry. Right, thank you. And there was one. There was a hand before you. Sorry, Comrade. There was a hand at the back raised, and then I was actually going to ask Comrade Donnelly to wind up. But please, ask.
Well, I agree with Bill Martin. Now, the quickest way from A to B, capitalism and socialism, the straight line. But it seems a lot of people do not see the lesson in going down one dead end and then say Leninism, for example, Labour Party reformism. They don't reach the conclusion, done the wrong action, let's learn the lesson, let's go down this other road, at least give it a try, the SPGB road. And that hasn't happened. I can't see, I want to hear evidence how and when it will happen, because I think that while the SPGB places a lot of emphasis, quite rightly I think, upon being right, being correct, yes, that's important. The battle of ideas is important, but it's by no means the whole picture. There's increasing numbers of people, especially in the anti-capitalist movement, who recognise that the most important thing, at least at this stage in the position of the working class movement, is not to be right, is not to be correct, it's to confidently say, well, we were wrong, we don't know. Let's not place too much emphasis upon being right or correct here. What we're all after at the end of the day, the reason why we want socialism, the reason why we want to better things within capitalism, the reason why we do what we do is because we want happiness. We want peace. We want love. Now, to what extent is Socialist Party activity bringing about those three features which everybody seeks in one way or the other?
Right, we'll take that as being your...
I just want to sum up on my last bit.
Right.
Because the activity of the significant numbers in the anti-capitalist movement are saying, let's work together. We don't know the right road. Let's try this. But what's paramount is the love we share with each other, the peace we have at the end of the day in the movement, and hopefully spread that throughout society, and how happy we feel about what we're doing.
Right, thank you. Well, I would remind you all that obviously discussion can go on for through the rest of the evening, and thank you all for the participation in this part of the evening, and I'm now going to call upon Conway Donnelly to make some winding up remarks for this part of the evening.
Thanks very much, Conway. Well, first of all, I'd like to make this, if it's okay, Conway Chairman, that is, there's many people here who I don't know, and who I'm, from what's been said, are not members of the Socialist Party of Great Britain, and it might be the first time or so that you've come across it, might be the 100th time, I don't know. But if you are interested in socialist activities and want to know more about it, leave your name and address on the table there, and we'll send you literature and also tell you what any new activities we're having in the near future. Please do that, because we don't want to lose contact with you. I think this has been a worthwhile discussion, although some of it's been a bit strange. For instance, a friend here who says he's an artist and said that but he has to compromise himself because he's got to sell it in order to... Well, many things that are sold are commodities. A work of art is not a commodity. A commodity, one thing it's got to be, is something that's produced for sale or exchange in a market with a view to making profit. But it also must be capable of reproduction. So therefore, I don't know what kind of work of art he's producing, but by its very nature, it'll not be capable of reproduction. So it can have a price without any value, just like many other things have price without any value. But what I would like to do is deal with this thing you said about inevitable. If socialism inevitable, we could all sit back and wait for it happening. Chris, wish that was true. Nothing's inevitable in human history. Human beings make history. So we can't just sit back and do it. We are part of history. Each of us affects the society we live in. And all socialists are trying to do is speed up the process in an organised fashion of spreading these notions of socialism. That's all that we know to do. And then a friend asked, how is this going to happen and all that? Could you give us examples of how and when it's going to happen? And rather than the Socialist Party putting all its emphasis in being correct, the sort of I told you so party, we should be dealing in a loving fashion with people who at least have got some opposition to the capitalist system. Why? What good would that do? All that would do is spread confusion. We would say to them, yes, let's organise an anti-capitalist demonstration. Who are all the people that are in this demonstration? Well, some of them are those that want to go back to small handicraft. Some of them are anarchists who want to have their own cooperative. Some of them, like that one had in America, want more jobs for America instead of sending the jobs to Mexico. These are the sort of people that are in this group. It's made up of hundreds and thousands of different ideas. Now, expressing love for these people is not going to do any good. What you've got to do is take a principled stand. Say, yes, we applaud the fact that you detest capitalism or some of the effects of capitalism, like a war. That's not enough. It's not just to be perverse and so everybody will hate us, as it were, and say, there's the I told you so party. It's because our view of socialism means a majority of the working class have got to be right. This will be the greatest transformation the world's ever seen. So we better be right before we start upon it. And I'd like also to say that just as in 1904, when those people who said they were opposed to capitalism said, ah, we agree with you, but in the meantime, we'll join the ILP, or ah, we agree with you, but meanwhile we'll go on the Social Democratic Federation, or ah, we agree with you, but meanwhile we'll form the Labour Party, and we'll get there, and we're all going together in a best loving band. Well, what's the practical politics of that? Abysmal failure. It's all very well for Socialist Party of Great Britain members beating their chest and saying, oh, look how we have failed. Look how they have failed. At least we have not been instrumental in leading workers into two world wars that slaughter each other. At least we have remained aloof from that and had a principled viewpoint of the world for the workers. It's a record to be proud of.